In the time when the world was still young, plants and animals and people filled all creation. But the people were not always kind to one another. In Earth's garden, there lived a man named Noah and a woman named Naamah. God said to Noah and Naamah, "There is too much hate on earth and in people's hearts, but your hearts are good, and you can help me begin again." I think you know how the next part goes. God said to Noah, "Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Do this quickly, for I'm about to bring a great flood to destroy all that is under the sky. Bring two of every animal that lives on this earth, birds and cattle and creeping things of every kind. Gather enough food for you and for them and store it in the ark." Now, the next part of the story might not be so familiar. Then God called to Naamah, "Walk across the land and gather the seeds and all the flowers and all the trees. Take two of every living plant and bring each one to the ark. They shall not be for food, but they shall be your garden to tend and to keep. Work quickly. The rain begins tomorrow." Naamah tied an apron of many pockets around her waist, and she walked through all of the earth's fields and gardens. She journeyed into the forest and carefully gathered the spores from the moss that made a carpet at her feet. She placed them in the cool, deep pockets of her apron, away from the light of the sun. She looked up, and after the wind blew, she gathered the seeds of the redwoods and oak trees and nuts from the pecan and pistachio. The winged seeds of the maples snapped under the gentle pull of her hands. She carefully lifted the seedlings of the cedar and the cypress and the persimmon and the plum. She found every tree from acacia to Sisyphus. Naamah walked into the fields right past the dandelions, pretending not to notice their feathery yellow heads sprouting over the grass. "Naamah," God called, "gather the seeds of every living plant." And Naamah knew that God meant the dandelions too. Reluctantly, she placed their seeds in her pockets with all the other seeds. Because Naamah had ignored them, God made certain that dandelions would cover the earth. Naamah gathered the seeds of the sunflowers and the buttercups, the orchids and the jasmine. The fields blossomed with dahlias and daffodil, lilies and lavender. She picked two of every kind and she planted them in red clay pots to carry onto the ark. She collected all of the flowers from the amaryllis to the zinnia. Tomatoes burst with seed and avocado pits rested in their green fruit. The fields were ripe with potatoes and pomegranates, oranges and okra, lima beans and lemons. Naamah carried large straw baskets to hold all the varieties of fruits and vegetables, everything from apples to zucchini. Naamah and Noah endured many days and nights while it rained. 40, I think. But then after that, all that water was there for months and months. There was a flood on the earth, and months until the land finally dried out. Naamah carefully placed all the seeds and seedlings in the deep pockets of her apron, and as soon as she set foot on the new dry land, Naamah knelt down, put her hands in the soft, moist earth, and made small cradles in which to plant. She placed downy tufts of milkweed seeds in her palms and held them up to the sky to let the wind carry them in all directions. God saw that Naamah had planted, and God said, because of your great love of the earth, I will make you guardian of all living plants. For a single moment, God gave Naamah's eyes the vision to see into the future from one end of the earth to the other. She saw how the seeds were carried great distances and how they landed softly on the soft ground. And as God had promised, dandelions were everywhere. Front and center of my New York Times, which is the home page on my computer, I see the graceful grand jeté of Maria Tallchief, the jaunty parade smile of Jonathan Winters, and the dedicated gaze of a young Roger Ebert looking out from over his newspaper and his reporter's desk. If those three deaths don't remind me that I am aging, all I have to do is wait until I wake up tomorrow morning and try once again to move my fingers from their rusty, stiffened pose. I am growing older. My friend, a young mother of a brand new infant, recently shared the news that her older child, a toddler, has discovered how to open the refrigerator. An exciting milestone of discovery, or the beginning of parental terror. It's all in the perspective. It's the inevitable change that occurs as the life process persists. Yet for a 2-year-old, even for a 22-year-old, the life task that is discovery of exploration, of identity, and finding intimacy, these are the tasks. It's a mission of reaching out to discover myself in the world, to find my place in the world and the people in it. So what is the task as we continue to age? What is our spiritual task, our emotional task? What is the spirit and soul work that makes sense as we grow old, say after age 55, where suddenly discounts based on age are given once again? Something happens, something shifts. I know some of you are thinking, hey, I got invited into the AARP when I turned 50. There is a 46. Oh boy. We will hold you in our prayers. One of the main tasks. So here's the thing. What does that mean? One of the main tasks for the second half of our lives is to make meaning. Now, meaning making is a life task, but its significance now takes on more of a central place. As we grow older, a prime concern is not just our career or our job, but the meaning of vocation. The work that I do in the world becomes imbued with an attachment of theological and ethical values. Increasingly, I have need for meaningful participation in society. So, actually, when you think about it, second careers do make sense. We need to find something that matters to us. And then, upon retirement, you know the part I'm going to tell you the part I left out. There is, when I look this up, the researchers say, there's young old, and then there's old old. I'm just going to leave out what that is, okay? I'm just going to imagine we're all, as we grow older, young old, okay? But that said, upon retirement, one of the spiritual tasks is to reframe that sense of self apart from the work role. It's the acceptance then of self, others, and God for who we are rather than what we do. We are newly wise and newly foolish. As our fingers begin to creak and our knees need replacement, say, hey, hey, if you've been there. As we begin to care for and bury our parents, as we lose our spouses and our friends, we also begin to ponder our own finitude. Our physical limitations begin to assist us in making our choices and options. And there comes the time when we can come either to acceptance or rejection of our earlier life choices. We can find faith and values which enable us to transcend the immediate limitations of the self, however we deem that to be. As Carl Jung describes it, the meaning and purpose for the second half of life lies in culture, a focus on the inner life, a deeper understanding and apprehension of spiritual, aesthetic, and cultural values. We have a need for summation, a reflection, a recollection, or as Darcy was talking about in the story, the memories and bringing those memories back. We want to pass on the stories that made us who we are, to take those stories and form them into a meaningful will and testament. Spiritual leader Black Elk called this view the high hill of my old age. We want to leave legacies, to plant seeds that continue to grow the future. Greater than a bucket list, it's significant because it's larger than us, it's less selfish. What I do not want to leave undone. But we don't have to wait until we've turned 55 or 46 to begin this work. Henry Nouwen invites us all to come to terms with what he calls the elderly stranger within, to address your own aging process and not be burdened with the fear of what the older person represents. We each have gifts for the other. We each have something to learn from the other. And we learn not statically, but by practice. Practices of gratitude, of generosity, these are our tools. Curiosity and open-mindedness can still be plucked up. We can still remain engaged with people of all ages and stages, and we can keep on discovering. I studied a few years back with poet John Fox, who names the importance of these skills all rolled up into one. He says, when someone deeply listens to you, it's like holding out a dented cup you've had since childhood and watching it fill up with cold, fresh water. When it balances on top of the brim, you are understood. When it overflows and touches your skin, you are loved. When someone deeply listens to you, the room where you stay starts a new life, and the place where you wrote your first poem begins to glow in your mind's eye. It's as if gold has been discovered. When someone deeply listens to you, your bare feet are on the earth, and a beloved land that seemed distant is now at home within you. Here in religious community, we have the perfect place and the perfect space to do this work of listening, which is a form of giving. We can share across generations in small groups. We can listen with an open heart. We can begin to listen to what is coming out of our own mouths when we share with others. Secondly, in religious community, we have the opportunity to interact across the generations as elders invite younger people into leadership and younger ones to receive mentoring and then to test these newfound roles. Global development expert Alana Shaikh spent a number of years caring for her ailing father as he was living with Alzheimer's. And she says, rather than distance herself from the pain that he was going through and distance herself from her own pain and deny her own mortality, what she did was face the possibility that she could very well face the same illness. In considering how she wants to live, she says, "I need a heart so pure that if it's stripped bare by dementia, it will survive." Older people are able to view injustice with compassion and not despair. Studies actually show that they are indeed happier and that older folks can engage with paradox. It becomes a gift, as one expert says, when we recognize that we don't have all the time in the world, we see our priorities most clearly. Meditation teacher Sylvia Boorstein, who now is in her golden years, has recently adapted one of her phrases from her own prayer practice. And instead of saying, as she used to, "May I be healthy," she has replaced that with, "May I feel strong," so that she can continue to say it up until the very last day of her life. Indigenous people use the name wisdom keepers. So may we acknowledge and respect this same capacity for wisdom. May we all continue self-reflection and spiritual growth so that we become wisdom sharers, wisdom givers. Words from sacred texts carry ancient wisdom like seeds, like so many dandelions over the years. As they say, "Don't be troubled, for all these things must come to pass. It is not yet the end." May it be so. Blessed be, and amen.